Greetings, I'm James Gillen, your host, and this is As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got a lot of things to cover here. I wanted to bring out a little news because there's some crazy things going on out there. The first thing I wanted to talk about was these X-class flares that are hitting the planet right now. It's really doing some crazy things to electronics and people's bioelectric fields. You know, some people are really kind of flipping out with this energy and doing emotional outbursts and things like that, and other people are actually going comatose. And just like the Stanford research showed us, that when you subject monkeys to magnetic field fluctuations, they go from comatose to self-mutilation. So we're going to see a lot of crazy stuff in the news, and also a lot of, you know, electronic failures, things of that nature with these flares. Now, right after we had this, I think it was an X5 flare, we have another M-class flare on the heels of that. So the Earth is already energized, and there's quite a proton stream coming in. And now we have another one right on the tail of that. So it's going to be a little crazy. You know, it's good to just get a lot of rest, drink a lot of water, become the observer. You know, go within and make your own personal connection with God, Creator, Spirit, whatever you want to call it, and ask it to assist you to adjust to these new energies, because everything is going to come up. All of our deepest, darkest fears and secrets and all the things that we don't feel good about are going to be surfacing. So, you know, it's real important to be kind to each other and be kind to yourself and just let this process do its thing. It's a good thing. You know, basically, it's helping the Earth to evolve and move on to the next level. There's also some explosions over in Arizona the past 4 weeks. They've had at least three just massive explosions in the air. They've ruled out sonic booms. They've ruled out anything on the ground. They seem to be in the air that these things are happening. You know, they don't know what the source of these explosions are. So there's been... you know, they've checked out with the military, they've checked out everywhere, and then just there's just nothing there. So that's another one that you can go to Roxy Lopez's link and check that out. I think it's Truth Denied, but that's a good one, you know, if you want to check that out, but the information on that one. But let me see what else we got here. Oh, yeah, Peru banned Monsanto from putting their GMO foods for 10 years. Go Peru. That's amazing. that's a good one. You know, it's funny. All of these countries, and especially in Europe, are banning these GMO foods. And, you know, because, you know, they've looked into them, they've done the research, and they found out that they have some very serious consequences. You know, not only are they totally corrupting the other foods around them, you know, the other strains of corn and things like that, they're actually killing the bees, they're killing the butterflies, they're having all these serious side effects, and they're actually killing humans when you get down to it, because when you look at the side effects of these prolonged ingestion of these GMO foods, you know, people are coming down with some very serious side effects. Now, Roundup and a lot of these other things they're spraying on potatoes, you know, the no bud and all these other things they're finding out are also having some very, very serious side effects. And, you know, and one of the things we're finding out, there's a common link here with these side effects, is one of the things that keeps coming up is basically tumors, you know, the one common denominator is sterility, especially in men. You know, it's really affecting men. So, you know, this all fits into eugenics. You know, you look now, they're releasing aspartame, and the information on aspartame, which is banned also in a lot of other countries and states as well. And it's turned out that, you know, it goes right after your brain cells and screws up your all kinds of problems. And then it also creates tumors and, guess what, sterility. So, you know, it's almost like these New World Order boys and these major corporations are going right to your groin. You know, that's where they're going. A lot of the shots that they're giving out now, the vaccines are actually sterilizing women. You know, the mercury in there, the thermosol and the other things that are in there are just having extremely negative side effects. you know, mercury goes, just kills brain cells instantly. As soon as it touches them, they're gone, you know. So that's one thing you really don't want in your system. And, you know, one shot is up to 100 times over, you know, the toxic amount. And they're giving people up to 5 shots, especially kids, you know. So also in the news, too, which is quite interesting, is that they're finding out that the Gates Foundation has, you know, been in a massive campaign to vaccinate, you know, all these third world countries. That's one thing we did know about. Now we're finding out that they also have been heavily invested in chemtrails. And besides that, they're actually heavily invested in Monsanto. And now Monsanto is heavily invested in Blackwater, you know, so this is not looking good, folks. You know, look at all the connections here. And you can also see a lot of Monsanto officials are going into the Department of Agriculture and holding high positions, just like the banksters in the present administration. So we've got some serious craziness going on, and some things that are not in the people's highest and best good. And it's time to wake up and smell the coffee. So stay away from those genetically modified soybeans and aspartame and basically all the other GMOs, because they do have side effects, and all that information is coming out now. That's mainly what's in the news right now. But I was basically shocked to see that Gates was heavily involved in chemtrails, which would tie into the eugenics. And also Monsanto is coming out with some aluminum-resistant seeds that are going to be resistant to the chemtrails. And if you watch what the chemtrails are doing, if you look at the science behind it, it's having a very, very serious side effect, you know, in nature. The grasses are about one-third right now, especially the salts, the barium salts and the aluminum are actually not allowing the trees to actually take up the nutrients they need and the water they need. So it's blocking them at the root level. So, you know, our forests and our environment in general is taking a serious hit. The bug population in the rivers has gone way down. The fish are not going to have much to eat, and so the fish population is going to follow. It's just going to be a chain of events. So we really need to pay attention to what's going on and who's behind it. And there's no doubt about it. There is a major eugenics program going on, and looks like an all-out war against nature. So the bees, the butterflies, and the humans, and your groin is taking a hit. You know, that's just the way it is. You know, just tell it like it is, folks. So anyway, with that news, the good news is that we are getting a lot of help from some third-party interveners, which are off-world beings that are coming in to bring all this up to the surface so we can all see it very clearly. And they are dealing with a lot of the underground bases, which seem to be closed down due to various sonic weaponry that seems to be used that is collapsing these bases. So one by one, there's only maybe a couple left, you know, that they can hide in. So they're going to be up on the surface to deal with everything just like us, and there's going to be nowhere to go. The looks like a lot of the banksters are running, you know, scared. They're running to their ranches, you know, and with their offshore accounts and getting out of Dodge, basically. You know, they're going to all these other countries. So you know, we're seeing, I think it's, it used to be up to, I think, 131. I'm not worried. Somebody said it was up to 260 major banking CEOs have taken off on the highest level. So they've all, they know, they see the writing on the wall, and they're jumping ships, you know. So another thing is, too, is that we keep hearing about all these arrests made. You know, we keep hearing Kissinger's been arrested, Gates has been arrested, Geithner's been arrested, the Bushes have been arrested. You know, they're all in jail under lock and key. You know, what I'm saying about that is that we've been hearing that for a long, long time. And you know, with no evidence. And we see these guys at dinner parties later. And you know, it's very disconcerting. So anyway, I wouldn't hold your breath on that. I'm hoping it's true. I'm hoping karma's coming home to roost. I know it will. We might be jumping the gun a little bit on this, but don't let down your guard and don't fall into a false sense of security. and think we don't have our work to do, because we still need to rise up and take our freedom back in our country and just our right to life, basically. So occupy everything. Time to occupy the skies too, and get rid of these chemtrails. They're insane, you know, what they're spraying here. Well, with that being said, you know, we'll close out the news, and I want to bring my guest on. I've got Giovanni is coming on the show, and we're going to have him talk about his experiences as a friar in the Franciscan order, and talk about some of the things he's experienced, and he's really gone far beyond that, and, you know, has had all kinds of crazy experiences of everything from walk-ins to UFOs to a lot of ultra-dimensional beings. But with that being said, I'd like to welcome Giovanni on the show. Are you with us?
Oh, yes. Hello, Jay.
Hey. How you welcome doing? To the show.
Thank you for having me on your show, and thank you again for extending the invitation from you and the family to come up and visit this week. I've had the wonderful pleasure of the Isetti family hospitality and also being back in Trout Lake area and seeing my friends up here. So it's been a wonderful week for me. It's been after a gloomy winter, and I know we've all had our share of bad memories from some of these storms that have been coming through. But I can see from, you know, just my trip up here what it did to this area. But it's been a wonderful time up here, and I'm so glad to be here with you. I guess I should give a little background about myself. I know no one knows me really, other than maybe some Isetti friends and, of course, you and the family here. And I know there might be some friends out there that might participate on forums that might know of me, but not too many people know my background too well except close friends. So I guess I can start off by saying that, you know, I'm Italian Welsh descent. I come from the Washington area, Washington D.C. area. I was raised there, and my family have a background in government service, civil service, and everything. But as a young man, I was basically raised and groomed to work in government, but I never did that. I was slated to work as a U.S. congressional page. I had done an internship when I was about 13 years old, but. My dad, who was a tavern and restaurant owner in the Washington area, really didn't want me mingling with the local politicians, so to speak. And then during that time, this was in the 60s, with the Johnson administration and all the stuff that was going on there. So he decided to send me to a Franciscan boarding school. That was the family decision. My mother was ill at the time, so my brother, older brother and sister, and him chose this for me. So off I went to New York, and I wish you were, you know, a very good school. Had wonderful experiences there. I met a lot of young men from all over the country and befriended people I never thought I'd ever meet, especially from the New York City area and whatnot. And from that, I did like most young men, I found myself a high school sweetheart, and eventually, you know, we got married after school, and I became a father, and like pretty much what everyone else did, I had plans to, you know, go to university and live a normal life, but it didn't really work out that way, and it was a young marriage, and things. Dissolved and we separated and my wife remarried and I went back down to Washington and to start over again, and from there I got involved in the medical field, and I worked for many years as I guess you would call it a physician's assistant at the time. It wasn't an official title, but I worked in an emergency room and then became a registered, licensed paramedic in the state of Virginia. And I worked for this emergency room group, which had three different concessions in the Washington area. And I did this for about 10 years. And I did quite well. I learned a lot about, you know, life working there, and had some really, really wild experiences with people, near-death experiences, the things that happened, in ER, people that should have passed on that didn't, and we saw some miraculous things happen there. But when, about 1980, I decided to change my life a little bit, and I through a fellow employee, and then through an employer, one of the physicians I worked for, I got connected to a job that was down in the Bahamas at a government installation. And this installation is known. I'm not really going to name it. I don't think that's necessary. But it is a government base that does underwater testing. Uh-huh. And I got hired as a medical personnel, and I was trained also at the they have an aviation section, and a contractor ran that, and they told me basically to be a crewman on a helicopter that would fly logistics with a pilot, and my job was to do medevac as well as also do daily logistics runs with this pilot up and down this this testing range. And it's a very unique place where I was at. Everyone's always heard the stories about, the Bermuda Triangle. And this is right in the middle of it. And I tell you, I had a lot of experiences, up in the air and seeing bizarre things, like funnels of water just coming, just coming up from the ocean. And you could see how maybe planes, in some cases even ships, would disappear in some of these bizarre storms and everything that would just all of a sudden appear. At the time I was there, there was a lot of drug smuggling going on up through that area from South America and up to across Cuba and up through the Bahamian chain. So we had our share of, these drug planes and things. So it wasn't unusual to see crashes and bodies in the water and whatnot. But one of the things that was really fascinating to me when I was down there was, it was totally unbeknownst to me, was an experience I had one evening. I was up on a tower with a friend, and we were overlooking the jetty that was off the base, and it looked out over this deep body of water called the Tongue of the Ocean, and within this deep cavern of water that was totally surrounded by a large reef, this is where a lot of strange things would occur. And one particular night, we were up there just, like a lot of people, just, chilling for the evening. And I noticed that there was lights coming up under the dark water about a half mile off the coast. And we watched this. My friend and I watched these lights, and they got brighter and brighter. And eventually they did break the surface, and they rose about 40 feet above the surface. And we're just, with our mouths open and going, are you seeing what I'm seeing? And, yeah. And the person asked me, he says, well, is that a helicopter? And I said, no, nothing's flying tonight. We were the only ones who were authorized to fly in the area. So this craft rose up, and it hovered for about maybe, about 5 minutes. We watched it on. Then lights came on, and it was pretty much what you expect, it was a disc shape, but more, not like Lady and Ship or like, some of the things we see in all the sci-fi flicks, but it was a little different, more flattened, but the lights would rotate and they would come on and off, and I could see the structure pretty well, but it didn't quite seem solid to me. And we watched it, like I said, for about 5 minutes. And then eventually it seemed to just hover away out, further away from us into the, towards the ocean, or deeper and, into the ocean view. So we went away. And then about a week later, because we did this on regular, we went back to see if we could see it again. And sure enough, it showed up again, almost at the same time in the evening. It was around sunset. And this time, it stayed there longer. I could feel energy coming from it, I don't know if it was communicating with me, at least, you know, that I was conscious of, but I do believe it was communicating with me. I do believe it was communicating with my friend, and we both later, you know, talked about that, and we had that same assumption. The thing this time, though, that really caught my attention was that this ship, it didn't fly off this time sneak off. It basically disappeared right in front of our eyes. And right then, a bulb went off in my head, and I knew I'd seen my first dimensional ship.
And yeah, you're kind of fading out a little bit. I don't know. You might want to speak closer to the phone. Yeah, that's a little better.
I'm sorry. I must have. Okay, there we go.
Might be on my end. I don't know.
Okay. But anyway, this time, like I said, it disappeared, and we pretty much knew we saw something unique. And I tried at that time when I was at the base, I tried to, you know, talk to other people about it, and most people were totally, they had no interest in anything. But I'd always thought something was going on in that water, and I knew that we were there for a reason, and it didn't seem quite real to me why no one had ever seen these things. And, you know, so that experience really opened up a whole new area for me, and you know, what was going on in the world. I knew that our government was probably, if anything, covering up something or hiding something, you know, by just its presence over this. And I imagined that what it might have been was an entrance down into the earth, or either an entrance into a base. But I always had the feeling that our government really did not have any control over it, that they were there basically observing just as much as we were. So, I stayed there for, a couple years. I eventually had a helicopter accident. I was involved in an accident, and I injured myself pretty bad, broke my leg and injured some disc, and I had to basically, you know, be medevaced out of off the base, but had to eventually leave, the base and go back to stateside. And I left Florida and went back home up to Washington, where I recovered for a while. And then I eventually got involved working for a major medical laboratory and became a manager for them in logistics and operations. And I did this for a number of years, about 12 years, in and around Washington area, Mid-Atlantic region. And it was a very high-pressure job. I was always on the road and flying here or there. And it's living a normal, at that time I was in my 30s, I was living a pretty normal adult life, you know, the American dream. I was making good money, company cars and expenses and everything like that. About in the early 90s, I started having problems, you know, with my heart. And I don't drink, and I didn't smoke. But apparently this was something that developed because of a cholesterol disease that I found out later ran in my family. But I had a couple of heart incidences, I guess you'd call them heart attacks. And it was determined that I needed a bypass. And so I had the surgery at the age of 42 at this time. And I had a triple bypass. And at that experience is where things really started changing. Because it's up my understanding now, and I don't know if your listeners are familiar with walk-ins. I know that's a term that's, you know, it's been widely used over the years. But what apparently had happened was that I had an exchange of entities, and when they put my they worked on my heart, they put me on a machine, and I think that's when this happened. Remember, I know it's when it happened, but that's when I came in. And when I say I mean, I am still the person, you know, that was in the body before. A lot of people don't understand about walk-ins. They think that it's another entity coming in and taking over the other while the other one's trapped inside. And I don't know about those explanations or terms. I've heard a lot of people, you know, that have been manipulated with, you know, government testing and things like that. But what apparently happened in my case was that there was a contractual agreement for life for me, that I am who I am now, for the entities to make this exchange. And what happens is, when you walk in, you might come in as another entity, but you immediately, as you come into the body, you inherit everything. You inherit the cellular memory. Mm-hmm. You are that person in every respect. It takes a little while for the body to, the spirit in the body to coordinate. It took me a while to get used to the body. I remember after I came in, I had a lot of coordination problems. I still have a lot of problems in pronouncing words. I can read well and comprehend and spell and everything, but I always have trouble speaking. I will mispronounce. And my mind always works much faster than, you know, my vocal cords will. And there's things like that, you know, that there are side effects. But immediately my family, during my recovery after the bypass, they knew there was changes in me. I even had my sister and some close friends that even told me. They said, well, you know, you're different. And I said, well, yeah, I just had a bypass. I was aware of what they were hinting around to, but I didn't really want to go there because they would have never bought it, nor would they have probably, you know, understood it. They probably thought I had too much anesthesia, and that could have been a problem in itself, too.
But,
yeah, you know, so anyway, one of the first things that happened was that I immediately stopped my old habits, you know, meaning I had no desires to do some of the things I did before, you know, hobbies and fixations. And one of the odd things was that I went to church one day. I was raised as a Catholic, as I said. I wasn't a strict Catholic as I became adult, but I was trained well, and I knew my faith, and I knew the Roman Catholic Church, you know, the ins and outs of it. And I was obviously turned off, like a lot of people in my generation, of what was going on, you know, throughout my my, you know, life with the church, and what was manifesting through the behaviors of the clergy and the religious, and also, you know, how the church was very complicit. I'd read, you know, so much about, you know, the history of the Catholic Church and how it had, you know, been part, integral part of a lot of very bizarre things through history. So I was aware of this, and I went to Mass one time, and there was a priest up on the, he was giving a liturgy, and he was talking, pronouncing that everyone out there, you know, if they didn't like what was happening in the church, that, you know, if they were so upset about everything, that they should, you know, just, well, you know, come in, you know, drop what you're doing, quit your careers and marriages, and, you know, come on in. Well, I actually took this guy up on it, and I showed up about a week later at his rectory and knocked on the door, and I announced myself to him, and he looked me over, and he says, you want a what? Because I was, like I said, I was, you know, at that time, I was in my early 40s. And he says, well, I'm getting ready to go on sabbatical, so I ain't got time to talk to you. So he kind of just, you know, shunned me off. He says, see me in another month. But what ended up happening is I did make a connection with a Monsignor over in Maryland, outside Washington, at a very fine church and a congregation there. And they took me under their wing, and I started, you know, back. It was basically like a religious conversion. I was, you know, professing myself back to my faith. And and then I made a decision that I would approach an order, and it was the Franciscan Order, the OFM, Order of Friar Minors, St. Francis of Assisi, the founder. And I won't get too more specific about that, since I am not, you know, I'm a former friar. There's no such thing, as I told you, as a retired friar. Friars don't retire. But I won't get too much in, you know, about who's and what. But I did isolate myself as a candidate and become a novice. And I spent almost 3 years with them. And I was, I did pretty well. I really enjoyed it. And it was something that really resonated with me. And I was later to find, while I was there, that I had a connection, a past life connection, with a former abbot, and this is really what's strange, is because where my family is from, and my father's family, are from San Giovanni a Fiore in Italy, in southern Italy. And San Giovanni a Fiore is a mountaintop monastery. It was an abbey. It's now a city or a town, and it was founded by this abbot and Franciscan. And I became to realize when I did some research on it that I had a connection with this abbot. And oddly enough, the Franciscans I was serving with realized it too, and this abbot had a history with the church. He was a church doctor, and he'd written some very profound things about, you know, what he saw. He was a visionary, and he pretty much predicted back in the 13th century that there would come a time in the church and there would be no need for religions or for religious, that we would all have it all revealed to us that this was the new age. And at first they wanted to declare him a heretic, but they never did this. And but all this was buried, by the patriarch. They buried a lot of this stuff, but it's been revealed, his writings. So
what was he? I mean, he was saying there's. Well, Jesus said that. He said, "There shall come a day when man shall not worship God in the mountaintops or in the temples, but within self." And so, was he like on that same order?
Yes, exactly. He basically was echoing, or I should say, repeating what Christ had said. He was definitely, a visionary. He knew what was going on, and he preferred to, like I say, stay in the monastery and live this life. And he really didn't even want to become an abbot, be the head of the abbey. But he finished his life and everything. But I do have a connection to it, and it was very strange because when it came time to get a name, my name is John. My birth name is John. Uh-huh. And I never thought of the name, of using my own name as a friar. We're named after saints is what's given. And I figured maybe Bartholomew or something that I was connected with at the time. But the superiors decided to name me Giovanni. And I thought it was funny because it was sort of like a mock, because they had mocked this abbot. They told me that, oh, yeah, your family's from where that heretic was, and, they used to do this to me and stuff. And you're always being tested. You're always being tested, and I was continuously tested. I was very resented, even though I know I was loved by many there, because I came in at an older age. A lot of the men I served with, the younger men my age, resented me because they supposedly had, given up things to be, religious, but the reality is they didn't give up anything. They basically, they just chose another path.
I'm curious what your feelings are on that, on how like giving up marriage or women or whatever.
Yeah, the celibacy thing. Yeah.
Yeah. How that would make you a better person. It seems like, I know with Jesus they called him rabbi, and that you couldn't call him rabbi unless he was married. And I know in his tradition basically is that if you weren't married, you really couldn't counsel anybody else. If you've never really been a householder, and been married, how could you counsel others? So they looked at it in more high esteem than...
Than
some of the other orders.
Yes. I realized this stuff, and they saw through me in that sense that was the first time I realized that I was basically involved with, some darkness. There was very, I don't want to say, there's a diversity, especially in the orders. There's some wonderful, wonderful beings there. I would never, ever put down the religious people I served with. Because most of them were devout and they were truly holy in the sense of their service to the church. They made real conversions and a lot of them basically were what do you say, freedom fighters from Europe, the ones I served with. The older men, the men in their 70s and 80s, they were fighting the Nazis in Europe and had partaked in war and everything else you could probably name under the sun that goes along with it. And after the war, they had these religious conversions, I guess, to deal with the pain and suffering that they had seen. And a lot of them turned to the order as a way to, I guess, to repent or whatever. And I had some wonderful experiences. That's really where I learned about, the word at-one-ment, so to speak, you know, that is becoming one. I remember one day I was in the monastery, and there was this old Polish priest named Sabian, and he had a hard time with a lot of his fellow friars. They really gave him a lot of trouble because he did not buy the program. And he told me once, he said, I saw him going up the stairs with him, he's really agitated, and he said, "Giovanni, let me tell you something. Don't buy this nonsense of community. There's nothing about community, this religious stuff. It's about you and your relationship with the One." And I thought he was talking about Christ, because everything to me at that time, as an adult, was about my relationship with Christ. That's really the reason why I went in. And what he was really speaking about was the relationship, not only with the Christ consciousness, but the One, consciousness of all of us. And it was very profound. So maybe a few months later after that, I realized things were not going to work out. I was not going to be able to do the things I wanted to do. My vocation was going to be in medical. But I could see that no matter what I did, they were going to probably put me wherever they wanted. You know, you have to be obedient, and I was, and I did everything I was told, and I had no problems with it because they never told me to do anything that that was wrong. They just had control over me. But anyway, I chose, to move from there. And eventually, through a family friend, I went back to school. I left, I went out to the Midwest, and I did stay with some Franciscans there. But I eventually went and took care of a friend, an elderly friend, and then went back to university and finished my degrees and everything. And studied social work and some other religion and some other courses, and got my degrees and everything. And but I saw what was happening. The country was coming apart. There was no social work. They were using more and more money for war. The wars were starting in Iraq and everything, and the country was starting to be bled financially. So I was just, kind of disillusioned at that point. I went back home to Washington. I definitely didn't fit in there. My family at that time, most of my family members were retiring, and they were starting even to change their opinions about things. My family is very dedicated and loyal to the country, so I would never say or, anything to try to hurt them or, offend them. I love my family, but they, they're totally, in many ways, on 3D. But what ended up happening was I one day, I just by accident started looking at the Project Camelot films by Gary Cassidy and Bill Ryan, and through that I got drawn into that whole esoteric community and all this stuff. And I'd always been a follower, of Art Bell. I'd heard of you way back when, on his show. I used to listen. And I loved to listen. You described the wonderful things that happened up here. I mean, it was just like magic hearing you describe the action out on the field here, right beyond me. And I said, "Oh yeah, someday I'm going up there. Oh yeah, I'm going there." And lo and behold, I did make my trek here, and I made it through a connection. I founded Project Avalon, the forum there, through a fellow member. And we ventured up here about 3 years ago on a trip, and we made a trek here to see you. And I got to meet you and a family, and got to see my first Mount Adam ship, so to speak, and the phenomena here. But one of the greatest things of being here, and I have to tell your listeners, especially those who've never been here, those who've been here know this, obviously, is what happens when you get here. It's just phenomenal, the energy. And I wasn't let down, you know, just coming back this week. It even though I only live, you know, a little more than 150 miles from here, the energy up on this plateau is unbelievable, and especially by your property, the vortex here is incredible. And with this, these sun CMEs we've been getting, it's just been it's been one crazy week. But
it seems like the veils are coming down with the more the, you know, this is definitely the East SETI Stargate here. It's a portal, and the more the energies come in, the more the veils drop down. And yeah. I've seen, too, at the same time, the more we have to rise to the occasion and get with the program that's unfolding here.
Definitely. I would say to anybody out there, and I know I have friends, and I know there's people on these forums that I participate on, are very interested in coming here. You have a big following on Avalon and another forum that I participate on. And I know that, you know, from your newsletter and your followers on that, as well as Facebook and everywhere else, that you're all over the place. You're world renowned, and I'm amazed sometimes how many people are aware of the SETI Ranch. I've been here, you know, for long extended periods of time. I've been out on the field. I've met people from all over the world. The wonderful thing about being at a SETI is that it's not just the idea or the anticipation of seeing something. The ships are always there. I can tell anyone out there that all you have to do is go out there with a digital camera. You can take pictures all day. I've lived up here at Trout Lake. I've been at different areas around the mountain. We've taken pictures. Now, I have to say this. You're not always going to see a disc, you know, or something, you know, in the frame with you. But if you take enough pictures and you look at them closely and you know, focus in on them, there's always ships there. They're always there. So that is
I'd love for you to talk about some of your experience. Yeah, talk about some of your experiences. I know when you first came here, we were doing a clearing session where we were, you know, clearing the energy and a healing session. And I'd love for you to talk about your first experiences in that session.
Okay. When I came, there was only a couple people up here. I'll say my friend's name. My friend's name is Carmen. She came up here with me. She's from New Zealand. And we went up into the meditation room. We met everyone. We'd been here a day or so. We went up and we had a clearing in the meditating room. And the family was there. And you do a clearing, and rightfully so, because this is a vortex, and energies come, you know, entities come here from everywhere. And they attach themselves to visitors as well as even, you know, family members. You have to clear it, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a very good thing because it's helping these energies move on. But one of the strange experiences that first time was when Kasekiel came in. I was sitting there in the circle with everyone, and I'm just going, you know, okay, this is interesting, and I was open to everything. And all of a sudden, this energy hit me. It hit me at the back of my head. And I think the thing was you asked me, is it all right if Kasekiel, interacts with me? And I said, oh, sure. You know, I'm thinking, okay, what's this guy talking about? And and within a second, I started laughing profoundly. I just couldn't stop. This went on for like, it was embarrassing, really. I remember Carmen looking at me like I was crazy. And not only was I laughing, but you and of course the other family members that were there, we were just, you know, just rolling like Buddhas. And this went on for 10, 15 minutes. And I remember screaming that I was telling him to stop. And when I say him, I don't see Kasekiel as a male. It's more of both or a neutral thing. But he was just having his way with me. It was just the most wonderful bliss I had experienced in years. It was just, just unbelievable. And
so what would you say, like, the energy experience? I mean, you already said it was bliss. It was just pure bliss or whatever. But was there any healings or anything else that came with that?
I've had, yeah. I believe the healing started then, but I was just here in November on the 11-11-11. I had a healing then. I just recently had a major medical healing, which was initiated through here. I've been here where I've seen people actually have healings. I've partook in them and observed them. I've seen people with cancer, you know, have remissions. You know, I've seen the people come back and talk about it. This spontaneous healing is happening all the time, and sometimes they're coordinated with friends and neighbors and other people that come up here to that bring the person that needs the healing. And like I said many times, you've had visitors here that had healings and they all of a sudden just freak out and they leave. You know, it's like they can't believe it's happening to them. Oh yeah, yeah. There's so much phenomena that goes. One of the things that I think I'd like to point out is that when people come, they don't realize the effect it's going to have on them physically. And to be around so many other people, especially if, there might be anywhere from a dozen to maybe 100 or so people on any given weekend or a week. Mm-hmm. And unless it's a conference, then there's much more. But to walk up and meet people and greet them, and people will come up and tell you their lives. And these are, like you said many times, people from all backgrounds, doctors, engineers, painters, what you name it. They come from everywhere and every part of the world, and they start talking, and you'll sit down with them, and they'll tell you this, and you'll tell them that. And it's just total acceptance and understanding from these people. And that is the most profound thing that I've felt here, is the connections I made with people. And I was very lucky to have an extended stay here where I saw it happening day after day, week after week. And it just kept building and building and building. And I would tell them, they would say to me, oh, where are the ships, and when is this going to happen? And of course, we'd have the sky watch, and these things would happen, and they'd see them. And you put the camera on the sky, and if they couldn't see them up in the sky, the camera, your binoculars or camera would, the nightlight, night vision would expose them. And, of course, many nights you put the cameras out on the field and with a little music, especially when there was children or dancing. You suggest to the children or some adults that, up to it to go out and dance. And you put the cameras on them, and the orbs would just start coming in, and they would interact with the people, and, it was just totally magical. I can go in about the fairies. A lot of people, scoff at that, but there's been plenty of pictures taken. There's been plenty of proof of that, and I can attest. I've never physically seen one. I've seen them in the photographs, but I can tell you they're there. I know people that have seen them. I know young people that have been here that have interacted with them, and they're very shy. Jana, who lives here, interacts with them quite often. And I think maybe I'm going to have to let her talk about some of this stuff, too. I've been talking for a while. But but I think the great thing about being here is we're all called here. Whoever comes to a city has been called. I don't care when it happens. I had a friend call me not too long ago and said, you got to get me up to a city. I got to get up there right now. And I said, they're not open. And he said, I got to get there. He lives down in California. And I said, well, don't worry, you'll get up here. But I told him that, the ranch is not open. It won't be open probably until April. And there's been a lot of damage. So you're not going to be able to really come up there and experience the things that you think you need. But he went on and on, about he just had to be here. But I got to converse with him. And he understands, and he's coming up in June. And thank God he's coming with his wife, and he's really happy about that, so they both can share that experience when the weather's good. Because I really suggest that those are coming for the first time, really wait until the weather is a little more stable. Because if you're looking to see ships, that doesn't mean they're not here, but you're not going to get great sky watches unless, it's summertime. But if you want to come up here to feel the energy and you're getting the call, you can come anytime, rain, snow, or shine. There's always something here. And I call it the download. And those that are called to come here get a download. It can happen when you're in your tent sleeping. Whoever and whatever celestial brethren that call you here. They've called you here to communicate with you. And this is the downloads, and this is where profound things happen to people. This is the most magical thing that happens here in my mind.
Yeah, I want to ask you, just coming up here again, I thought there, you had an interesting phenomenon where you were, I guess, at night, you kept seeing this huge face of like a lion in your face.
Oh, yeah. This
is yeah, tell people that story.
Yeah, besides Ezekiel, I've never really, I'm just, you know, I'm in bliss when I'm up here. Anybody knows me, I'm just walking around laughing all the time or you know, just giddy. But no, I don't have too many experiences like some people do. But what this week, well, prior to coming up here, I knew I had to come, and I, you know, got in touch with family and everything, and it was arranged and everything. So I came up, but I knew something was up. And I just, about a couple weeks ago, had you know, passed a major kidney stone that I've had for a year. And I decided that I would, you know, this all started back last year around the conference time. And, of course, when I was here, I had a healing in on 11-11-11. I had a very profound healing then. But this thing never completely went from my system. But finally, I decided to heal myself. I said, that's it. I've had enough. And within a couple of days, this thing passed, and it was huge. I mean, it was documented, you know, in hospital, you know, this huge kidney stone that I had, but it just would not move itself. But I passed it, and it didn't hurt that much. And then I knew it was time to visit the ranch again. And while I was sleeping the other night, I usually sleep pretty well here, but we've been having so much energy coming in because of the sun and as well as the vortex here. I was closing my eyes and I kept seeing this big face, this big feline face. And I've heard of, you know, the feline, you know, beings that are here. I've heard you talk about them. I've heard many of the visitors, you know, talk about their experiences. But I kept seeing this face. And this is what brought me up here. And you went on to tell me, I didn't know the name of the entity. Can you refresh it, my mind again? You know, I'm bad on memory.
Bacall.
What's it called?
Yeah, Bacall. B-A-C-A-L. I think it's Bacall.
It's a big creature. Or actually, yeah, word yeah. Creature. It's a big entity. Very powerful, very strong. And I felt the presence. It was all over. I even woke up out of a still sleep the other night, and I felt the entity moving around the room. I usually don't tell people things like this, but this really actually happened. I was experiencing it in consciousness, and I could see it moving, you know, the shadow dimensionally, and I felt it. And I don't know if it was doing healing on me, but it was conversing with me. I know that I, you know, it's definitely there, you know. And I, like I said, I never really thought about these things, nor worried about it, because I don't worry about experiencing these things. I mean, just being here was enough for me. You know, I've seen my share of ships. I've seen my share of healings. I've seen just about everything that one could see as a visitor and as a friend. So I know there's a lot more that happened. I've heard.
Yeah. What does energy feel like when you first connected with him?
Oh, well, I want to say that I've never really, except I said like Casillo, the energy is it was love. It is no question about that. I felt no threat at all. I did feel the power. The energy was very strong. It's almost like an embrace. But what I got from it was that, you know, I you know, without going into private stuff, why I was here and what was going on, and in the sense of why I was here and what was happening to me and what was happening, not only to me but to others here, and it was almost like a blessing. That's the best way to describe it.
Kind of a blessing, grace, and protection at the same time.
Yes, I was receiving what they call in religious orders and also in Christianity's graces, and I was being rewarded, James. I'll tell you that, because I've been working really hard on myself in the last year to to let go of a lot of things, and I have, and not to be judgmental anymore, and to and not to let my surface monkey mind run me. And,
yeah. The lion beings have a long history. They used to call them Narsringa, which were the benevolent protectors. The felines back in India. I know Sekhmet was also part of the Egyptian lore. But unfortunately, a lot of the Christians had a real issue towards anything feline or cats, and they considered them to be evil and demonic. I guess because they're issues towards the Egyptians, who actually love cats and had them for pets. And I know at one time they actually, when they were doing the Inquisitions, they were, killing people and anybody that was outside the church or any Wiccans or things like that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they were murdering all the cats and burning them as well.
And we know what that resulted in, don't we?
Yeah. And they end up with a bubonic plague after that, or the Black Plague. And because they killed all the cats, and then all of a sudden the rats just took over and mice, and then they all ended up with the bubonic plague. So that's kind of like a self-inflicted program there.
I wish these people could, your friends and followers could have been at the table tonight. I was having dinner with James and some friends. I'll mention the name. Neil Kramer was one of them, but another friend, a private friend, and James was talking. James has I've studied religion, but James knows religion. He knows the Bible better than most ministers. He is a minister, but he knows the Bible inside out. He's been tested. He's had ministers come up here and test him, to see what was going on here. And he stood his ground, and they left here smiling. So I can tell you that for a fact. But people need to know that you have a vast knowledge of what has transpired in the last couple thousand years, if not in the history of this earth. And sitting here with these you and them in this round table was just totally fascinating. I wish we could have carried that over to your radio show, maybe. Maybe another time you can do that. I have some others that are very knowledgeable on this subject.
It was quite it's funny because we were getting it from the legal perspective, ancient law and ancient history. And then we had Neil Kramer talking about, his take on things, which was amazing. And then you were speaking, all of us were.
Yes.
And I was like given the real ancient history of the Bible and the gods.
It was just like bouncing back.
And yeah,
back. You never can really, duplicate that necessarily. You can do it again. But if we had the radio going, then it would have been a wonderful show.
I always wanted to do that. Is just take a mic and set it in the middle of the table. We did that once. We had Brooks Agnew and Bob Dean and.
Yeah.
And who else we had? We had Mel Fabregas.
You've done that at conferences.
I think Neil was there, at the last conference. And we just did a round table and just put everybody on. And boy, I think that was one of my best shows. I really enjoyed doing that, just getting all the different perspectives from people and how they're experiencing the ranch here and seeing all the higher dimensional things happening in the ships.
It's just amazing. What's funny about that is, that you're one of the few people I know that in this community that allows other speakers to interact with each other, at least in a public way. They talk to each other in private and everything, or with individual groups and everything, but you actually have a round table. And it's so wonderful to hear all these speakers and broadcasters, converse together. I mean, you can sit in the audience. Now, I do recommend anyone that can ever get up here to a conference. They're always great. And this year looks like it's going to be good. I have some ideas, but I know you'll announce soon.
Last year we had. Hope we might have him back again. We'll see how his health holds up. But last time we had Bob Dean around the campfire, and
oh my god,
we gave him his cigars and his bourbon, and Boy, he did talk, and he told stories all night long, and just kept everybody on the edge of their seat. And
yes,
you know, I think Neil Kramer was out there around the campfire. You know, it was amazing.
Everyone was there. Yeah.
It was quite amazing. And you know, I've always felt too is that, you know, in the Native American tradition, they basically say, you know, nobody has the whole truth. Not one nation has the whole truth. And when everybody gives the prophecies, then you'll understand what's going on. But but not one person has, you know, all the information. I think it's so important for us to all sit down and share.
That's right. That's exactly right. And it seems that when these people come here, and I say these people that are in the public eye, their inhibitions, they become more real than I think they even realize.
Oh, yeah. They have to drop the persona sometimes because, you know, it's funny. It's kind of a joke here because we have people calling all the time, and they're really famous people. And they're famous movie stars or soap operas. And
yeah.
You know, we had Robbie Williams out here, Danny Dyer. I can go on and on. And
yes,
names with
I know,
people.
I know.
But, you know, I don't watch TV, and none of us do here. And we don't even know who these people are. And,
You didn't know who Robbie Williams was.
And we treat him just like everybody else. And it's really interesting because, you know, they'll come here and they'll say their name. And I go, yeah, and, you know, and they go, well, I'm this and this. And then they'll say some soap opera or something.
Well, we were talking the other night, and you mentioned a Hollywood person, and I won't name him. But,
yeah, we don't even know who they are because we don't watch TV.
This person knows you?
Yeah.
And you said, oh,
yeah. We just say, hang out. You know, we all put our pants on one leg at a time here, and you know, feel free to just hang out with us, you know.
Yes.
And they usually do, they always do, basically. They just say, God, this is nice. I can just be myself here. You know, I don't have to run, you know, this Hollywood program.
It's amazing to see how many people really are in line. You know, they're doing their thing, you know, in the world, I guess, for their art or whatever. And in some cases, for money, I guess. There's nothing wrong with making money. As long as you're doing it honestly with good intent. It's amazing. There's a lot more people that are awoken than a lot of people want to.
Well, you never know who's going to be at the campfire. Cause I think it's hilarious because we'll just be sitting there around the campfire talking. And, you know, one day John Gray was here and this guy looks over and goes, are you John Gray? You know, he goes, yeah. He goes, I can't believe it. You know, they're like, it's because you just never know. You just never
and
know.
The inhibitions
who's gonna
go away, it's very refreshing to see people, even if you're not, you know, in the conversation, but to just listen. The Bob Dean thing. I posted pictures of Bob, you know, around your campfire talking to people, and there was literally a dozen people just, you know, like within inches, you know, or foot a foot or so from them, just with their ears, you know, beckoned.
There's rows within rows of
people. And a glass
there.
Of whiskey, and he says, you know, just give me a good cigar and a glass of whiskey, and I'll tell you some stories. And believe me, there was a lot of glasses of whiskey that were, you know, offered to him. But he's a wonderful gentleman, and this story, and I really was amazed at how much he would open up in that way. You know, things that he would never speak of, probably. I know he wouldn't speak of in any of his, you know, talks and everything, but
I love how he tied it all together, and we have a real good connection between us and had a lot of the similar experiences, and he's one of the few people that came out of the military that understands the spiritual side of things and the connection and even the connection, you know, with the off-worlders and Jesus he's figured it out and has it all tied.
Yes, he knows the story.
Yeah,
he's guarded in some cases, but rightfully so in letting some information out. It's not that he's holding it in to protect himself or anything like that. But it's not necessary for some of this stuff to be just told out. It's to be for people to be ready and realize. In my opinion, I mean, I know people want disclosure, and but I think you got to be ready for what you're going to hear. Mm-hmm. And I think he understands that. And Not everyone out there is ready.
You covered everything to the bases on Mars and Moon and off to Alpha Centauri and the technology we have and how we're not letting it out. I mean, he just let the whole cat out of the bag and his connections with the beings and sitting right next to them and having conversations with them
and he's
going
so
up
natural.
On the ships,
I mean,
everything.
Here he is. He's an elderly man, but he looks like he's, you know, probably my age. He looks better than me in many ways, I feel. And he's just got this energy that's unbelievable. I mean,
yeah.
I would watch him with Tadar, your wonderful companion here, your canine who's from Andromeda. He loved your canine, your dog, and he's so genuine. I remember what he said. He says, "If I only knew this place was like it is, I would have been here a long time ago." And he just fell in love with the city, and I'm hoping that he will come back this year. You said there's a possibility, and hopefully he'll come back just as a guest and just share his presence with us.
Definitely, yeah. The invitation's out there, so we'll see how that pans out.
Oh,
but you know, if his health permits, I'm sure he'll be back out here. We're kind of coming up to the end of this hour. I wanted to hopefully, is Jana still with you?
Yeah, she's around. Jana?
I'd love to get her on the line and talk about, you know, some of the nature spirits and things like that here.
I wonder if she's around.
Basically, if you want to call into the show and share some of your experiences or you need a little help getting through these times and these energies, feel free to call in the show. We'll give you the first number. The toll-free number is 888-627-6008. Or you can call 530-413-4522, or you can call 530-413-5011. So we'll give those numbers out again, give you a chance to get a pencil if you didn't get those. So we'll give them back out again in a few minutes, and hopefully we can bring Jan on the line or bring some callers in. But it's some fascinating things going on, and I know people are having some pretty wild stories. And you know, if you've been hearing those earth groans or those booms in the sky that have no origin, they checked it out with the military. They checked it out everywhere, and there is no activity. It definitely was not a plane, you know, breaking the sound barrier. So there's some crazy sonic booms and massive flashes in the sky, and they have no origin. They tried to find out if they were transformers, and they tried to find out, if there was an explosion in that area. They know the areas where some of these big flashes of lights went off, and they can't come up with anything. But hopefully we get Jan on the line. Are you with us, Jana?
Yeah, hi, James.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
For those that don't know Jana, she's like our resident elf and nature intelligence extraordinaire. She's been working with the nature spirits for quite some time. And what's kind of funny is we always have shared visions when something is here on the ranch that needs to be healed or needs to be taken care of. It's quite interesting. We both feel it at the same time, and we both see the same thing. And some pretty bizarre stuff has been showing up lately that is in need of healing, and we've been clearing these energies and moving them on together with some others at the ranch. And Connie's been helping us out as well as a few others, and Steph and Pam, and you know, trying to keep these energies moving on. But you know, having a vortex, it's like a brilliant light shining out, and moths do come to the flame, and beings do come here for healing. So anyway, let's bring Jan on. What do you have to share with us, Jana?
I guess it's sort of, I see things from a planetary perspective. I think that's why I was attracted here. And I guess after being here for some time is that I realize that there's openings like this all over the planet. And that for whatever reason, I guess I've been using the term gatekeepers or something, and it's not a self-inflammatory thing or anything like that, but the more I've become acclimatized to the energy here, the more I've become aware of what the reality of it is. I just sort of heard you talking about the earth groaning things and all that, but we often feel things here before they happen, mm-hmm. whether it's earth changes and things like that, and not like we're conspiring to have these things happen. We're in support of recognizing them as they're coming in and trying to transmute that energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but definitely over the time that I've been here is that it's become quite accelerated. And that's exciting, but I've also come to call this the Jedi training zone.
Yeah, it definitely is.
With a light heart, you know?
Yeah.
But the narrative of Star Wars does have a deep bearing in reality, believe it or not. I mean, as many mm-hmm. things, stories that have been written and turned into movies over the years that so many people resonate with, is that there is actually some truth to that. And we're starting to see just the dichotomy of that phenomenon really come to the surface. But, I mean, the phenomenon here, I believe, happens for various reasons. But often these wellsprings or energy vortexes, historically, because I started researching this stuff after I came here to try to make sense of this, of course, because it's always good to ask questions, is that oftentimes these, I like to call them wellsprings, and other than vortexes, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's language. But they often occur at the bases of mountains, also in Slovenia, and Scotland and other places, so it's observable. I'm still trying to figure it out, but also not too much. But that there's a grid on this planet that's being activated, and I was very excited to see some of the photos of energy phenomenon coming out of Machu Picchu and parts in South America where these dormant volcanoes, some of them have already blown, that's reigniting this original grid. Some people call it the Atlantean grid. I'm not sure what it's called, but it's a natural intelligence that's mm-hmm. Been on this planet for a long time that was locked down, somewhat destroyed in another time, and it's reigniting. And I feel in my heart that here, it's just another one of these points on the planet, and that there are people all over this planet holding the proverbial light or the energy down at these places. And there's a lot more, I guess, that comes with it than we're ever really ready for.
Yeah, like the Jedi training here. You know, going back to that, for people that didn't get it, that article on the newsletter, we actually sent one out that talked about the Jedi training and the parts on where Luke... Actually, you know, Yoda sent him down into this chamber, and he says, you know, what am I doing down here? And he says, you're going to meet your greatest fear, and you're going to deal with your wounds and your traumas, you know, because you have to, because you cannot, you know, deal with the Force or unless you're clear, you know. So he actually went down there, next thing you know, he had to face a few things, and then he had to face his father. And so he had some deep abandonment and wounds from, you know, concerning his father. And he had to face the fact that, you know, his father was Darth Vader and really wasn't the nicest guy on the planet. And, it's kind of interesting how we are all going through this test, this initiation, and we're having to go into the chamber and we're having to look at our wounds and our traumas and our fears, and it's happening here at the ranch at a much more rapid pace because the energy is much stronger. But now it looks like the whole planet is undergoing this process and having to totally deal with the shifts, you know, and the changes.
Well, truly, the greatest battle is within,
mm-hmm.
and it's. That's the fallacy, too, is that it's so easy all the time to project and look for a place to put our discontentment. And that's what I'm coming to find in observing my peers and my family and the world, is that that game is going to have to end,
mm-hmm.
projection and blame, and that we are going to have to make the space for ourselves and the surrender and the forgiveness of ourselves to actually do that. And it doesn't mean going and hiding in a cave or anything like that for any extended periods of time. It means, you know, it can be as simple as just going for a walk in nature once a day, just to allow yourself the time to go within, because nothing is outside of ourselves in these times. So we really just have to double and triple check ourselves about, is this mine? How does this affect me? And what am I going to do with this? And also the sword. I know a lot of people, when they come across a lot of injustice, that they want to pick up their sword. And there's a lot of ancient and beautiful warriors on this planet right now, and we all have our place. But the energy that I've been interacting with is very much about, okay, yeah, you do have a sword. You've put it down for a bit. You can pick it up again, but now only because you've learned to wield it properly. Uh-huh. And I know that is a big message for a lot of people that are on this path.
Yeah, that's one of the hardest lessons I've seen, because basically when you get very close to your necromancer, your biggest fear or whatever it is that your ego will just take charge and it'll shift into this self-righteous ego, you know, with this, you know, condescending judgment or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it will do all it can to hang on to that pain or that wound and the enemy and keeping that polarity going, like right up to the very end. And it just depends on how tempered you are or I would say how, I don't want to use the word evolve, but, you know, through time, you realize that a lot of your enemies weren't really your enemies, and that they were just, you know, your own projections and a reoccurring pattern.
Yes, but, and that is why we are our own greatest teachers.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because all
these and so I find out too, there's some people that are getting it, you know, and they're going, yeah, I'm going to get it this time. I'm going to own this one. I'm going to heal it, you know, I'm going to be the observer and observe what's going on here and call on my own God self to come in and help me release this pain and anger I'm feeling. Or, you know, people are shifting into the opposite where they're just, you know, screaming and flailing and trying to find allies and swinging their swords at everything around them, you know.
Yeah, I feel like what's important is for in that process is for us to not only have compassion for others, but for ourselves in that process. And it's almost easier to have compassion for others because we see easily ourselves in others.
Oh, yeah.
I've done it too.
I mean, I've been in situations where I was dead certain that person was pure evil and what they were doing and everything else. And I found out later I was wrong, you know, and you do that a few times and pretty soon you go, you know, maybe I should reevaluate this one. And you take it out of the ego and take it within to your spirit. And then you can get the right conclusion from that experience. And then it settles in the soul and you're done with it.
Another thing I'm learning is that within that going within process is that, okay, so yes, we have to trust ourselves, but what I'm learning is to surrender all the ideas I have and to go to others, you know, and that's been a big part of my process is the willingness to be vulnerable and to say, you know, I'm feeling this, like what's going on with you or whatever, and contacting people all over the world too, not just here and the people that come here, but to really check myself and to really use that divine mirror that is other people. And for me, that's been an incredibly liberating experience because that blurring between the self and others is really happening for me and on a lot of levels, but that I'm finding the greatest truth and the greatest teachers and just listening to the people around me without really gaining any conclusions. But to really, yes, I internalize, yes, I take the time, but I also have learned, because I'm a bit stubborn too, right? A lot of us are, and we want to figure things out for ourselves and all that, but I'm moving much more into a humble, vulnerable space where I'm willing to go to people and put everything aside and say, okay, so how are you interpreting this feeling that we're having planetary or collectively. And it's been incredibly rewarding because when you're willing to bear all, or like what I've been saying for years, be naked in the breeze, you wouldn't believe what can come back to you. And I think it's time to put a lot of that stuff aside for ourselves. Just for me personally, that's been really helpful.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah, it's good to have some people. Speaking of people, we have all kinds of callers on the line.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, if you want to stick around, you know, and answer a few questions, or we'll see who they want to gear them towards. But we've got actually Robin on line one. We'll see if we can get her hooked into the show. Robin, are you with us?
Hi, James. How are you?
Hey, welcome to the show. I'm doing fine.
Thank you very much. This is the first time I've listened.
Great.
But I am on your mailing list, and I had a question I've always been curious about. And so I thought that I would ask tonight. I've had direct experiences since I was a child, and most of them related to this time now. I read a lot of the stuff on your that comes out in your list, and what I've wondered is, how do you discern what to send? There's so much disinformation, which I find extremely dangerous, more dangerous than some of the fluff that's out there. But I wonder, how do you discern what to send out when there's so many? A lot of it negative stuff, a lot of it scary stuff, and people aren't always able to discern for themselves. So how do you discern what to send out when you
It's kind of tricky. There's some things I just stay away with. I know some people have a very negative agenda, and they have a program, and they're there for disinformation, or they have just a very negative program, or a very religious program or whatever, you know, that has a lot of judgment and condemnation. So I just stay clear of that. Some things I send out for a reason, because people make some outrageous claims about events in the future. And having a newsletter, that's what it is. It is a newsletter. And so people want to know about it. But I'll put a little comment in there, you know, like at the top, say, be discerning, or, you know, this is this person's truth, and this is what they foresee. And there's some people doing things that I put out, you know, for a reason too, because, you know, to show that, hey, look, this guy is not really who you think he is, but, you know, for people's discernment. But one of the things I really like to focus on is I want people to wake up and just see who's running the show, what's happening to the environment, and to our own bodies, you know, with all these, you know, Monsanto programs and things like that that are happening.
Right.
And it's all, it's not out of negativity. It's out of love, you know, for humanity. And I really want to see people healthy and whole and, you know, moving in the right direction. So I try to send out things that are empowering, that empower people to go within. And I also send things out that people need to know about so they can avoid, you know, so they can stay healthy.
Sometimes it's a difficult line, you know. And before I go, I just want to mention really quickly, because I do a lot of research on foods and follow lines and read things in Whole Foods, that store. And I read, I don't know if you know if this is true or not, but I read that it said Codex Alimentarius deems that 20 parts per million of gluten is considered gluten-free. So all these products that say gluten-free are, in fact, not or can't, you know. I'd had some pretty bad reactions to some stuff called gluten-free that I bought in Whole Foods. Anyway, I'll get off the line, but thank you. Enjoy listening to your show this evening.
All right. Well, thanks for calling.
God bless everybody.
Okay, all right. Okay, looks like we've got Matthew coming up. Matthew, are you with us?
Oh, yes, sir. How are you doing tonight, James?
Doing great. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm actually at work right now. I'm actually surprised I've stayed on the phone this long. Don't worry, I'm a manager. I'm not going to, like, get in trouble or nothing. We haven't had a customer come in yet, but I really just wanted to call and say thank you for everything you're doing, James. I'd like to stay awakened probably about 3 years ago. Been kind of on a spiritual path myself to, you know, rectify some of the programming that's wronged me over the years through, you know, society and everything that we have. But there was a I don't know if it was the 11-11-11, but there was a online group meditation through the eSETI website that I participated in, probably, I think, September, October. I'm not sure if it was 11-11-11, but this online meditation, I'd never been a part of anything like that before. And, you know, I've done my own meditation over the years and really helped awaken myself. And there is a point at which this online meditation that I just broke down in tears, brother. And at that exact moment, you started talking about this immense light that was coming into the group. And I just, I knew that connection was me to the group there, the family at eSETI. It's changed my life ever since. And
thank you.
I've been in the military. I've lived up north. I've lived in Idaho. I've lived in Utah. I've lived in California. And I'm originally from Fort Worth, Texas, and I live back here now. And really bummed me out whenever I moved back to Texas, because I found there was a lot less spiritually awakened and spiritually aware people, you know, closer you get to the Bible Belt and down south. And it really, really bummed me out until I had that online course with you guys and that online meditation group I participated in. And ever since that day, I felt like I was supposed to be put down in an area, not really geographically, but socially, that is less apt to awaken minds, because I've always felt like I've had a calling in my life, and this is it, to help awaken people, because I'm not somebody who, you know, forces somebody to see something, but I'll respectfully, you know, show what knowledge I can to people who are ready to receive it. But
well, it's great to hear, you know, that we've had a lot of people asking us to do that again, and they said they had tremendous openings and healings, and a lot of people just broke down and cried too, and which is a really good thing. I mean, it's a major release and opening when that happens. And so I always love to hear that you know, it is working, that the people are actually feeling the energy and connecting, and it inspires me to do more, you know, to do more of these meditations.
And rightfully so. And if you do, I'll most definitely be. It's hard for me to make it up to the ranch, but any online course I'd be more than apt to be a part of. But, James, I just want to give you my condolences and thank you for all the work you're doing. Jana, you too, everybody out of the eSETI Ranch, and just everybody listening that has their hearts and mind open, you know, to everybody. I love
Great.
You. I hope you all have a good day. I got some customers in store I got to take care of.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Not a problem. You guys have a great night.
Yeah, we are going to be doing some live streaming here. We actually are working on it right now to where we can do live streaming talks and meditations and classes and all kinds of things. So that is up and coming. And if you want to know more about eSETI, sign up for the newsletter. And we're revamping our site and getting ready for all kinds of workshops and classes. So definitely sign up for the newsletter, and then that way we can inform you as to what's up. Looks like we've got Mary coming up here. Mary, are you with us? Looks like Mary's gone. Anyway, but we'll just keep going. So, well, Janet, is there anything else you want to share? I know a lot of people are having trouble. I always share that one psychologist was here. When she was sitting on the front steps and that fairy flew right up in her face and hovered for a while, and she had a male friend with her. And I tell people that story. She goes, "I don't believe in any of this stuff." And when this thing flew in my face and sat there and then took off, she, you know, sit there fluttering, you know, flirting away right in her face. And she goes, you know, "I medicate people for things, stories like this." And so
that's why that fairy came to her, I'm sure.
Yeah. And it was a life-changing experience, you know, for her. And a lot of people have come here and taken some amazing photographs of fairies. And I'd love for you, maybe you want to talk about some of the photographs that you've taken.
Yeah, I was actually posting some. I'm building a bit of a blog to share some of the phenomenon that I photographed over the years, and that, I mean, borderline is that when I came here, yes, I'm a young person that had a lot of experiences, like many people of my generation. I'm a 31-year-old woman, and there's a bit of a tribe amongst us, and there's a lot of sensitives of this generation. So I'd seen a lot of UFOs, and I'd had a lot of experience in other realms and out of bodies, you name it. And fairies were just not on the roster for me. They just were not. You know, I came up here to figure out the UFO thing and what I had seen in my past and what I was experiencing. I was trying to understand something. But when I landed here on the land and started sleeping on the ground, you know, some things started coming to me that that completely reevaluated what I would call the normal course of business. And that it's okay to empty our cups of everything that we've experienced in our lives, and I'd kind of done that at that point. And it's okay when you have a direct experience to own it and to not dismiss it. And for me, the nature spirit thing didn't make sense. It makes a lot of sense to me now. I understand why these beings were attracted to me. I understand why they're very easy to perceive for some and maybe not so much for others. I mean, I could literally go on about this for hours.
Well, the children, I know a lot of the children that come here actually see them, and they know where they are, and we know where they are, too, because we've experienced them. Yeah. And to have the kids come here and go, yeah, there's a bunch of little people right over there.
Yeah,
or
and it's,
that's where
I mean,
the fairies
I talked about
live.
This in that film, that documentary film that's on YouTube now. And that's another brave thing to do, is to be the brave mystic, which all of us are, not just here, all over the planet. To actually put your own self-importance aside or everything you think you know and to speak your truth. And so I talked about nature intelligences, and that's what they are. And fairies is only one aspect of it. But
there's
I don't even
and,
really
and, little people all dressed in green and red with funny little shoes, all kinds of things running around.
Yeah, and that basically what I observe here is that literally, magnetically, if you can come towards the ranch. Most sensitive people will feel it miles away. And when you come towards the mountain, when you turn onto Little Mountain Road, you will see the mountain right at that left turn. It looks enormously large. When you come around the corner, it's a slight, slight corner. But as you're turning towards the vortex, there's an illusion that the mountain shrinks about three-quarters of its size. And I've been kind of researching this personally, sort of through magnetism and other vortex phenomenon, that it's literally like a magnetic phenomenon that goes on here. But that magnetic phenomenon also thins the veils, as it were, you know, how it is during a full moon with the energy, and that it is so easy, if you come here with a bright spirit and a clear heart, to connect to these intelligences, because a lot of them are just in the next realm over. And there are lots of other realms, and you know, these nature intelligences are also very mischievous, you know. And there's also, from what I've met in some of these younger folks than me, there's some of them that have actually incarnated to help bring the message of what's happening with this planet right now. And sometimes these folks from age 8 to 24 or whatever, they come here and they just get crowded by them, and they have incredible experiences. And we do have, you know, a couple people in our extended family here that come here because they're so connected to these other dimensions because they're from them, you know, as we all are. But it's really fun here because the energy of that, there's so much joy and there's so much inspiration. But there's also a lot of deep knowledge that needs to be released through osmosis if you're carrying that already. But yeah, it just blows my mind the things that that occur here. Just I woke up today and I have a tree growing in the room that I live in, and I create sanctuary for them to hide because they're rather shy. And if you want to work with them, this is what I've been told from working with them, is that they can't even handle human energy being projected at them. So I create sanctuary for them. So I woke up this morning, and it's March, and it's gray, and it's rainy, and there was a flower growing out of the base of this tree from underneath this little sculpture of, like, what looks like an elf or a troll, like some sort of, you know, archetypal nature spirit. And I didn't see it there the day before. I'm a pretty observant person, but this thing was a full-blown tulip-type thing, and I don't recall planting anything in there. It might have been mixed in with the potting soil. I'm not really sure. But it was nothing less than of a miracle when I woke up, and this random flower, like a tulip, was right in this area that I've created for them, and it just gave me so much inspiration and faith that there is still magic in the world, and it just blew my mind because, you know, even with the slightest bit of pure intention, you wouldn't believe what we can achieve as individuals and as a collective. If you know,
well, for the, let's say for the skeptic mind, you know, would come up here. If you looked around, you would see that we still have a lot of snow on the ground, and nothing is blooming anywhere. There are no flowers anywhere.
Yeah, and we live in a hut with a wood stove, so it freezes at night. And I have it's a very hardy tree. I mean, I'm just trying to find an explanation. I've been reaping my memory of, did I plant a bulb in there? Like, how did that get in there? Nonetheless, if it was mixed in with the potting soil, there are so many unseen forces conspiring with us as individuals and with nature that
work
in pure service.
Just a boom, even if you did put a bulb there this time of year, why there aren't any other flowers blooming anywhere?
No.
I mean, most of it's still under the snow.
So I went back there later to investigate. I looked at it, and I found another one in another pot, and it was an amaryllis, but they bloom in December during Christmas time. It's a wonderful burst of color in Christmas. And down at the base, where there was actually no growth, there was no shoot. I'm a junior botanist, to say the least, but I understand plants. And there's a flower, literally looks like it's growing directly out of the soil. And I'm an observer of nature. I think that nature and trees and plants are some of the most advanced beings on the planet, if you want to call them beings. But it was like they were showing me, like, it's okay, we're with you, and that we're helping you. And I'm not looking, personally, for me, I'm not looking for this. I'm not, but I sense them, you know, and I still have that sort of feather in my pocket. Okay, here's the gnome feather, here's the elf feather, here's the fairy feather, because I don't want to be attached to it, because then it's sort of like heavy, and then maybe I have to defend it because of all of that. But so I'm open, but there's something going on here that's absolutely exciting.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've seen them myself, and I wasn't looking for them either, just like I wasn't looking for the UFO. I was on an intense spiritual path. You know, I was going for my own awakening healing process and connecting with what I experienced in my near-death experience and just totally anchoring in that love and joy and bliss. And so all these other experiences came with it. And I'm still not so attached to them. I just acknowledge they're there. I don't make it my main focus. I make my own awakening healing first priority. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when you see something down to detailed information, to the colors of the outfits they're wearing and the shoes and everything else. And then you have a little kid come up next to you and go, oh, I just saw these two guys over here, two little elf beings, and they give you the exact same description. You know, you got to listen. You go, wow, that's, I guess they are here. That wasn't my imagination.
Some of the greatest validation I've ever gotten is from children.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's so important to listen to the children because, you know, they're not so far away from heaven as and if we keep them open instead of turning them into materialistic zombies, you know, and competitive, you know, slamming all these competitive programs, you know, they might be able to share a lot more with us. I'd love for you to talk just a little bit about, I mean, just some of the shifts you've seen here, some of the other interactions.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing that kind of loops back, is that I'd had experiences with ships and different beings, and that for me, I thought that fairies were out of the loop, mostly because they're in our recorded history. They're in our recent recorded history, especially in the UK and Scotland, Ireland, Britain.
Uh-huh.
And because it's so close to us, it's easy to dismiss. It's the same thing about giants in our folklore. It's very easy to dismiss. If you were to go to India to some of the ancient temples, all the ET stuff, and I've only had the chance to start watching this ancient alien stuff on the History Channel through YouTube because I'm not into TV, but they're kind of hitting the nail on the head. But as far as ships, here is... Yeah, the first night I came here, what was it, 2009, it was a long trek here. I arrived here around 1 in the morning for the conference, and I walked out of the car. I strolled into the field from the back entrance, and to this day, now almost 3 years later, I've never seen anything so spectacular in my life. It was a huge blue, very blue, almost a silverish platinum blue, what we call here a power-up. So it's a small point of light that enlarges 4 to 1,200 or more times its size in, you know, less than 3 seconds. It's a huge plume. So I walked in the field, and this huge blue plume just ignited above me and my friend's head. The energy literally brought me to my knees, not to be dramatic. And then these two gold, I don't even know, gold lights just rushed right by us. Like, you could feel them, you could hear them, you could see them, and it was like the welcoming committee, you know? Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not as dramatic for everybody, but there was a really big welcoming when I came here. Because for a lot of people that do make it out here, it's a bit of a trek. There's always a lot of resistance. That was huge. But I mean, it's mostly what I experience to date. If sometimes I'll even be laying in bed and I'll be awoken at 2 in the morning with an immense energy, and I'll go outside and I'll be able to see them. You know, or, you know, there's other experiences that go on out of body and things like that. And, you know, I don't welcome every energy that comes in. I very much safeguard myself, and I ask many questions about who you are, what your intentions are. But the phenomenon here has exponentially increased within every range of the light spectrum, but especially on the mountain itself is what I think we experience the most, is the lights up on the mountain. And, I mean, we can go on about that and ideas about inner earth bases and things like that. And just to talk about inner earth is that, for me, I understand it as a dimensional place, but the earth, yeah, it's like a honeycomb in a lot of senses. There's lots of caverns and all of that, but the Agartha that is spoken of, or the Avalon, you know, space is, I believe, a dimensional space of the heart of Gaia, this being that is incarnated as a planet that's awakening and making her transition right now. And that's what I really feel is my message, talking about who she is, what she's going through, those ambassadors that are here to help her through a transition, and also that all nature spirits are cosmic. They're not just tied to Earth. They've come to Earth to help. You know, they're indelibly cosmic, and that we're the ones kind of out of the loop trying to figure out who's Andromedan, who's Pleiadian or Sirian. And like, you know, James, we're all in it together, but there's something about the human condition that's knocked us out of our memory of where we are and why we fit in. But I think that that's part of that, and I think that that's, you know, a big catalyst for this awakening.
Everybody's looking for the missing link, and I've always said it's us. You know,
we're the missing link.
I mean, all the other kingdoms work together, and they're fully aware of each other, and, you know, there's no problems. But with humanity, we seem to have taken a path where we've totally separated ourselves from all the different dimensions and kingdoms, and even each other, you know, which is sad. Yeah. But I think that's coming to a close. We are,
and I think it's also gonna affect our how we look at value. Uh-huh. And economy and gift and money and everything. It's not just a one-way street down the fluffery, nutty kind of New Age path. This is a fully transformative process, and I can see why a lot of people would resist this, because there is a lot of nuts and bolts, and then there's a lot of other stuff. And like the caller that called in earlier about discernment, her name is Robin, talking about that, is that the only thing that I wanted to say is that it has so much to do with the heart. And that's how you discern, is that we do everything we can to kind of undistort our own energy bodies, and it's not a complicated thing. It has to do with trusting yourself, and that you know, the intellectual mind has its place, the heart has its place, but it's time to really bridge the gap between the two, and the throat is right in between there, too. And I know a lot of people are being really activated in the communication aspect and speaking their truth, because, you know, this whole system of energies through our body, you know, it could be a paradigm in itself, and that we're trying to merge that. But I think the heart speaks, and that's where we need to really go to trust ourselves. So it's like, you don't know what you're feeling, or you're standing in front of a bag of food, you don't know how it feels. Really stand in front of it, and stand in front of it with your heart, and see if you're pulled towards it. If you're repelled back on your heels a little, you know that it's not right for you, you know, and you can trust that, because your heart is way more intelligent than any other organ in your body, and that we need to learn to trust ourselves and trust that feeling.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that actually live from the heart and follow their heart. And we're talking about navigating, you know, through areas and even here on the ranch sometimes. And there's a lot of times, you know, we were talking about a conversation earlier where you're walking along and you just feel like, oh, don't go there, you know. Mm. And the more we drop in our hearts, you know, you can navigate through all of these changes and situations and everything.
And it gets easier, and we stay out of judgment more, and the true nature of unconditional love starts to actually embody, instead of this intellectual idea about what unconditional love and oneness is. It's about living it.
And if you drop down into the heart, most of your problems go away, because it's usually the mind. And, you know, what's that old saying, you know, an idle mind is the devil's playground or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what they're saying is, I believe myself, is that I think it's very important to meditate and to do, you know, your practices. But at the same time, when you do them, like Qigong and all these other practices, they're all about dropping down into the heart and the practice of no mind. And when you're in the heart, you don't have all the me programs and the I didn't get this or I need this or all those things just seem to fall away, and you shift back into harmony and service. But that's one of the main key things.
It's a tough thing to move through, because we are on a planet that's like the graduating class, you know? I mean, we're getting to the core of the onion here. So
yeah,
we kind of have to hold space for ourselves and everyone that's going through that stuff, you know? And yeah, I'm just, you know, on a daily basis with the energy here, I'm just blown away and amazed by just the human spirit in itself more than I've ever been. And it's just like the you know, looking at a seed and knowing that the hologram of its future self is in there. It's like that 300 or 30,000 year old seed that was awoken out of the ice in Russia recently. That dormant data, that dormant potential that's always in there, and being able to carry over, like holding that highest light for a person, or putting your intention on whatever someone else is going through, or yourself, to know that perfect hologram is in there, you know?
And we can carry little squirt guns around, you know, and say, I'm trying to water your seed, you know, I'm trying to bring forward that potential.
Yeah, it's a precarious process, you know, it takes a gentleness and a carefulness and just a love or a nurturing energy. I'm not really sure.
I was thinking about that, you know, if you're throwing your crap everywhere, how are you going to grow?
Well, crap can be a great fertilizer.
Exactly, you know, but if you're throwing it everywhere else, how are you going to grow?
Right, you know, you've got to put it at the base of the tree.
Yeah, keep it around your feet.
It is so interesting in these times, and I'm really glad that I came to Earth, and that I feel really proud of the people that I meet on a daily basis and that call here, because there's a lot of brave souls that are making the transition to get out of their comfort zones, to challenge themselves, to come to spiritual sanctuaries or vortexes or whatever it is, or however much they think they know or don't know, and they just come up here. And, I mean, it's a very challenging place to live. You know, this is a service-run organization. But you don't really get, like for me, you don't totally get depleted when you're in your joy and you're doing what you feel is why you're here on Earth.
I know we had that conversation a while ago.
We got to rethink our careers.
You have an endless amount of energy.
Yeah.
You know, people go, oh, there's just too much work. There's too much work. And I go, that's because you labeled it as work.
Yeah,
and that's because you see it as not having fun or joy, you know, or you're not, you know.
Well, I think there's a lot of deprogramming that's going on right now, and it's not an easy thing in the society that we've been raised in. And the deprogramming, it goes deep. It goes way deeper than I think we've known. I mean, even from the movies that a lot of us have been watching in the last 30 years as kids. I mean, it's very subtle. And another thing is that about the mind is that we need to stay vigilant right now about what's passing through our fields and what's coming into our minds. Is this my thought? Am I going to let this run amok in my mind? Or am I going to try to keep this in check? You know, like, observe the thoughts as they arise in your mind, if you can. I mean, I think that's like, you know, we've got yoga, physical yoga, all these different forms, but I feel like the mind, that muscle or that bubble or whatever you want to call it, whether it's in or out of the body, that's where there's a very high form right now where we need to really watch things as they're arising. Because if
I agree. It is, you know, one of the main things we've said here is if you don't like what you're feeling, do a healing.
Yes.
And if we don't do that, if we don't take responsibility and clear the energies that we're feeling and drop into that, there are other entities that actually feed off of that and create chaos and create...
And this is in the world abound. That's why people that come here, they go, whoa, what's with all the amazing, juicy energy? It's because it's so amazing what we can get used to when there's a thick fog of influence.
Yeah.
Or there's frequencies out in the world where we are. And that if you can maintain that personal sovereignty, you're on. You know, but I mean, it also attracts all kinds of other things too, but it does come down to personal self-responsibility. And I think that is what it is about, you know, learning to wield the sword. And I mean, everyone has different roles here. So I'm speaking from personal experience, but that it's now's the time. I mean, it's not up to anybody else, basically. I mean, we all know that.
Yeah. It's all about, becoming the observer, being accountable, responsible for you know what we're transmitting, you know, our actions, our energies, and then going within and owning it, you know, and because the quickest way to disempower yourself is to actually shift into that blame and projection and all those stuff, because then everything's outside of yourself. You have no control of it whatsoever. And,
I know, that whole transmitting thing, just on a lighter note, is I've been connecting deeply with some of the main devas of some big plants on the planet. Coffee, cinnamon, and what was the other one? I just got whitewashed by that. But there was something about sort of the, wow, something just came in and completely washed my brain. I have no idea what I was going to just say. I'm sorry.
Well, I was doing clarions as we were talking.
Oh,
so that's
why.
But I'm always doing clearings. It's automatic. You know, I have an automatic clearing process going on in my mind, and whenever I feel something.
Well, I know when I first met you, James, and you were doing this in your mind, and I was walking alongside you, and we were going out to fix a fence, I nearly fell over.
Like, I forgot.
And you're doing this in your mind. I had no idea. And all of a sudden, I just go, do, do, do. I'm going to fall over. And you're going, that's really interesting because I'm doing clearings. And that's why it's been such a joy to work with you and to know you, because we're constantly learning from each other. We're validating each other. And we're helping each other through this process. But that's why we're a bit of a micro-macrocosm here. And
thoughts, really definitely instantaneous. It looks like we're coming up to the end of the hour, and so we'll be signing off here in just a minute. Is there anything, any last words you want to leave with the listening audience?
It's time for to be an impeccable warrior. It's time to really to observe ourselves and to take time and to take risks to go within. And to face that stuff.
That's and definitely go with the flow. I mean, what I tell people, too, is that, you know, there are just massive energies coming into the Earth right now. We're moving into alignment with galactic plane. We're aligning with Alcyon, a central sun. Mm-hmm. We're getting hit with up to 500 cosmic energy blasts, it seems, you know, from the from the cosmos. We don't be so hard on yourself, because
exactly.
These are really rocky times and we are getting tested to the max. So,
be gentle with yourself too. Allow yourself.
Be kind to yourself and be kind to others.
Yeah.
And go within. And when you feel something, go within and clear it. You know, learn how to clear it. And if you don't know how to clear it, give us a call. We'll send you the techniques on how to clear it, or buy the mm-hmm. books, Reunion with Source or Becoming mm-hmm. Gods. All of those healing techniques are in there.
Yeah, it's the time, and that's why we're a resource center. But, you know, we are a service-run organization, and we're here for everybody. So everyone just be patient and loving.
Exactly.
But, thank you so much.
All right, thanks for coming on the show.
Okay, bye.
All right, we're at the end of the hour. I've got to sign off. All I can say is have a great night, and be kind to each other, be kind to yourself, and you know, that old saying, let go, let God, works really well. You can say let go, let Creator, let go, let Buddha, whatever you want to call on, but take the time to just sit down and meditate and release, you know, and allow yourself to adjust to these new energies, because they are coming in. Anyway, this is James Gillen, your host, signing off. Have a great evening. Good night.